right, so let me see a show of hands if you've ever heard of E.F. Hutton. E.F. Hutton, oh.
Well, there's been commercial way back when. Right.
Commercial, okay, so.
But I don't know what it is.
Those of you who've never heard of E.F. Hutton, you're like born in what, like 1995? 71. 71, okay. So anyway, E.F. Hutton was a brokerage firm of yesteryear. And they had this well-known advertising campaign. And so what happened, you have a scene and they kind of pan into this restaurant, busy, busy restaurant, lots of people talking, blah, 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 lots of noise. And then the camera would pan into one guy, like Winnie, and Winnie would be saying to the person he's having lunch with, my broker is E.F. Hutton. And E.F. Hutton says, and all of a sudden, everybody is quiet in the restaurant, and everybody goes like this. And so the message of that well-known ad campaign was to convey that their brokers gave really good investment advice, and everyone wanted a piece of it. Now, E.F. Hutton no longer exists today, so if you wonder about their investment advice, but I think they got acquired by Shearson, and then probably Group or some big underperforming bank like that.
We own everything.
I think that's right. I think that's right. Often in the most significant decisions in our lives, and I'm not limiting this to investment decisions, seeking and following good counsel can make all the difference. The difference between happiness and disaster, future reward or regret. I'm just going to spend a few minutes talking about McKinsey. Now, McKinsey is the company I worked for 15 years, and it's affectionately referred to by insiders as the capital F firm. The firm is a global management consulting firm which advises CEOs, senior officials, officers, and boards of directors on issues of strategy. And so we, you know, help our clients solve various problems from a top management view, and bottom line is we help our clients make more money. They are the very largest corporations in the world. We serve about half of the world's largest 200 companies. And we have about 16,000 employees in 90 offices in 50 countries. An older article from 1993 in Fortune described McKinsey as, quote, the most well-known, most secretive, most high-priced, most prestigious, most consistently successful, most envied, most trusted, most disliked management consulting firm on earth. So you ask, it's a lot of descriptives. People love us and they hate us. Our clients, we believe, come to us because we think that we give the very best advice there is out there, and we help our clients produce the very best results. So I'm going to tell you a story about a situation, a real study that happened with one of our clients. So there's a CEO of a very large corporation, not doing very well. And so this guy comes to us, the CEO comes to us and says, if you can help me out, I need to be better performing. His company was having problems and he wanted to make more profit. So after going through 2-3 months study with a team, it became very clear to the team that this company could in fact significantly improve its profits and performance. There was one principal obstacle, the CEO. Yes, this was the guy who hired us. He was the problem. See, he had this focus on short-term financial targets and wasn't really interested in the long-term, and it was really detrimental to the company. So, very difficult situation. Your client who hires you, he's the problem. So what do you do? Well, part of our value proposition is, and we think that clients come to us is because we're independent and we're objective and we call it like it is. So we don't like to pull punches, and in fact, our own code of professional responsibility says we put our clients' interests ahead of our own. Call it like it is, and even if they don't like it, that is our advice, and that's the way we stay independent. So in our report to the client, and we met with the client, we usually put together a deck, you kind of present it, and the client's in the room, you say, great opportunity here, and we laid out very specific steps the company had to take to turn itself around. In that set of recommendations was an outline of how the CEO's role would be reduced within the company. Needless to say, the CEO was less than pleased, and he fired us. And so 1 year later, roll forward, the CEO was replaced, fired by the board, and the new CEO calls us in and says, look, I found this McKinsey report. Can you please present it to me? I'd like to understand what you advised the old CEO. So after, you know, doing the presentation again, he basically said, look, what we had predicted was exactly what happened, and the company's position was now, a year later, in worse position. So the new CEO said he was prepared to hire us immediately and implement our advice. So, you know, longstanding client now. So what are the kind of lessons that we can learn from this CEO or ex-CEO? Well, while he did not adhere to our advice and he messed up, he did do certain things right. He recognized, one, his company was in trouble and he needed help. He needed outside help. Second, he sought the very best advice and he sought wise counsel at the right time. Then again, he did a number of things wrong. He did not heed the wise counsel he got, probably because it was tough advice he really didn't want to hear. He didn't listen and he wasn't receptive. He didn't take that long-term perspective. He went to, for the short-term quarterly profits, what do the analysts think? And he wasn't willing to make some tough changes today for a better tomorrow. He wasn't anticipating that he, in fact, the person seeking the counsel, could be part of the problem. And he was not very thankful for the advice he got. He fired us. And finally, he didn't recognize the possible consequences of ignoring the good advice. So in the end, he lost his job, the company suffered, and almost went under. Now, in Scripture, there's numerous examples of folks who seek counsel well and seek counsel poorly. I'd like to just go over one guy, Rehoboam, who did not do such a good job. Now, just to refresh your memory, in 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles, Rehoboam was the son and successor of Solomon. So he was the appointed king following Solomon, and he was the last king to claim the throne of Old Israel. That's when all the 12 tribes were united. And he was the first king of Judah after the kingdom was split into the northern and southern kingdoms. So there was a gathering of the tribes in Shechem. So Rehoboam goes up, and while the people there in the northern kingdom acknowledged him as the rightful heir of the throne, they demanded certain things of the king. First, they demanded that he lighten the forced harsh service that Solomon had put on them, and then that he reduced the burdensome taxes that King Solomon had imposed upon them. So Rehoboam wisely says, well, give me 3 days to think about it. So he goes to two groups of counselors to seek advice. So the first group he goes to are the elders. These are the guys who probably counseled Solomon when Solomon was king. Little older guys, they're pretty wise. And their counsel was to lighten the tax and lighten the work as the people had asked. And if he had taken this advice, it probably would have resulted in peace, at least for some time, as between the northern and southern kingdoms. Rehoboam, unfortunately, rejected that wise advice of the elder counselors and turned to his younger contemporaries for their advice. Now, these guys basically counseled them exactly in the opposite fashion. They said, you know, don't listen to the people, make it harder. So King Rehoboam kind of went away, and his response to the people was rather harsh. In 1 Kings, we read, "Then the king answered the people roughly and rejected the advice which the elders had given him. And he spoke to them according to the advice of the young men, saying, 'My father made your yoke heavy, but I will add to your yoke. My father chastened you with whips, but I will chastise you with scourges,'" or the literal word is scorpions. So Rehoboam followed the wrong counsel. He misjudged the temper of the people, and the kingdom, the 12 northern tribes basically split off and then formed the northern kingdom. So everything down from that point forward was pretty much downhill. So let's look at what Rehoboam did. So what did he do right? Well, he actually went and sought counsel from a multitude of counselors, so that was a good thing. He originally went to the right place. He went to the elder counselors that had advised his father, Solomon. And he gave himself time. He said, let me think about this for 3 days. So he gave himself time to make a wise decision. But he did a few things wrong. He sought counsel from the wrong guys. He went shopping, in essence, for advice. So forum shopping. So let me find some people who will agree with what I want to do. He wasn't very teachable. He didn't listen and wasn't receptive. And he didn't recognize, like the ex-CEO, the consequences of ignoring wise counsel. So what happened in the end? You have 10 of the 12 tribes of Israel rebelling, and then the nation of Israel, God's chosen people, was split into two, the northern and southern kingdoms. In the fifth year, so 5 years later, Egypt invaded the nation of Judah, the southern kingdom, plundered Jerusalem, and virtually reduced the kingdom to a position of a vassal to Egypt. The kingdom of Judah sank more and more into spiritual and moral decay, and Rehoboam was, for the rest of his life, at war with Jeroboam, who was his son-in-law. Not a good result. So anyway, today what I would talk about is obviously the topic of seeking counsel, and it's primarily limited to Proverbs. Proverbs has lots and lots of verses on seeking counsel, how to do it, how to do it well, how to do it poorly. And this is the kind of the kind of wisdom that's laid out in Proverbs is the kind of counsel that could help Rehoboam or the ex-CEO avoid the disasters that they ended up in. And if you look at the handout, the left side is primarily the kind of positive things about seeking counsel, and the right side are the negative things. Let me start off with my definition of seeking counsel. You know, it's a work of... Yes?
What, in hindsight, how should he have known to go with the older guys versus the younger? Is it primarily the track record, or you know what I mean? He's got
And that is one of the questions that we'll look at today, which is, you know, who should I go to for counsel? And they ought to be, as you say, they're characterized by they're wise, they're righteous, they're men of understanding, they're people who actually have a track record of making wise decisions in their own lives, and then giving counsel in a wise fashion. So we have to be very careful about who we seek counsel from. I mean, clearly a multitude of counselors, but you'd prefer they're all kind of wise. Not always, no. I mean, I think age doesn't necessarily provide wiser counsel. I'm sure you can find lots of examples in Scripture where wise old counselors gave the wrong counsel. And there are younger folks like Timothy who probably gave pretty wise counsel to a young guy. So age doesn't necessarily, although I will say that, as I get a little older, there's something to be said for experience and time. Having gone through buying a house, I kind of know what to do and what not to do, or I've done it twice now. That's sort of experience which could be helpful, but it's not determinative, right? Lots of brokers have gone through houses and they're foolish, right? So, I have a working definition of seeking counsel. It's on your handouts, and I'm sure we can improve upon it, but I define it as humbly, transparently, and proactively seeking input early in your decision-making process from someone who is able to provide us with carefully considered, objective, and wise advice, which is ultimately in our best interest. So the way I kind of tackled the topic was I kind of did a who, what, when, where, why, and how kind of thing of seeking counsel. And some of the topics or questions are probably not controversial, but underlying them there's some nuggets, I think, that Proverbs brings out. And there's a couple questions more along the lines of who we should seek counsel from, which is what Corey asked, and really how we should seek counsel. I think most people intend to seek counsel well, but I think we may muck it up on the how we do it. So why don't we tackle some of the easier questions. Why we should seek counsel? Well, I mean, no one's going to dispute this, but I think in general, seeking counsel can help us better discern God's will for us in a particular situation. By doing so, we'll be able to avoid costly mistakes, difficulty, and heartache. We are all fully accountable for our own decisions and are going to reap rewards or experience future loss and regret. So, when we make decisions, and we make them daily, we should make sure that we're making wise decisions. And so Proverbs outlines a few specific reasons for seeking counsel. First, we can experience victory, especially in an abundance of counselors. We can get wisdom. In 13:10, we read, "But with those who receive counsel is wisdom." Proverbs 19:20 says, "Listen to counsel and accept instruction, that you may be wise the rest of your days." And in 25, we read that our plans will be drawn out. So a man of understanding can draw out plans that are in our hearts. And then finally, our plans can succeed. So with many counselors, our plans will succeed. On the flip side, there's actually some pretty negative consequences, some of it literally life or death. You think, well, if I don't seek counsel, what's the big deal? But, you know, Proverbs says there's some pretty negative consequences. We can experience defeat. I'm sure no one wants to experience that. We may experience strife as between us and people. We may suffer harm. Companion of fools will suffer harm, or even death. Without counsel, our plans may be frustrated. That made me pause, right? Frustrated. So, you know, I have these plans, I don't seek counsel, and God is allowing the thing I want to do so badly to be frustrated. Not good. At least I don't want to be there. And finally, if we don't seek counsel, we're in effect operating independently. And of course, we all know that independence is the essence of sin. So we read in verse 18:1, "He who separates himself seeks his own desire. He quarrels against all sound wisdom." Folks who are operating independently often have difficulty seeking counsel. They even go to the first step of actually trying to. And in the end, I think they pay. Verse 28:26 says, "He who trusts in his own heart is a fool, but he who walks wisely will be delivered." So I'm pretty convinced it's a good thing to seek counsel. At least that's what Proverbs is saying. Let's just kind of quickly look at, you know, what kind of person seeks counsel. I'm sure we're going to want to be on the left-hand column rather than the right-hand column. Left-hand column talks about men of understanding seeking counsel and wise men seeking counsel. That's a category we all want to be in. A couple of types of folks who don't seek counsel: scoffers and fools. And so, again, I'm not going to spend a whole lot of time on that. So let's move to the topic of when we should seek counsel. And interestingly, I can only find one verse in Proverbs, and there may be more, but you know, let me know if you know of them. But any one verse that advises on when we should seek counsel, that is when we are preparing or making plans or going to war. So the first one, okay, I understand. So anytime we're making plans, we should seek counsel. Now that second prong, going to war, none of us are military generals, as far as I know. We have one gentleman who's actually served in the military. But you might think that second prong is not that applicable. Oh, two, sorry.
Three.
Sorry, three.
Four.
I guess this proverb is much more applicable than I thought it was.
Anytime I answer good, my wife, it feels like war.
I'm going to move on from there. But I think the principle under, you know, if going to war is a major, major thing. And so the principle behind that proverb, I think, is that anytime we're about to make clearly a significant life decision, as war is, we should be seeking out counsel. So the question I know you're all thinking is, well, do we need to seek counsel on every single decision I make? How about, you know, what am I going to eat for breakfast? Cereal or toast? Or, you know, what should I wear, a tie tomorrow or not a tie? Probably not. There's something in between waging war and very, very small. Well, for some of us that are color challenged, maybe picking out a tie color is seeking wise counsel is good. I ask you to think about that. We can flesh that out in the sort of discussion time. But you know, in what situations should we be seeking counsel? Another principle on when to seek counsel is the earlier the better. So I have lots of internal clients, consultants who call me, and some of them are good clients, and some are bad clients. The bad clients are the ones who call me in a panic, usually. Steve, I got to talk to you right away. I just came out of this meeting. I signed a contract. I'm going to send it to you. Tell me if it's okay. You've done it. You've signed it. That's really, really not the kind of counsel you want to get, because I really can't do a whole lot. Either it's done or undoing it is going to cause a lot of angst and grief as between us and our clients. I would urge you to seek counsel well in advance of taking action. And we've all experienced avoiding a problem is better than working oneself out of a problem. Let's move to who we should be seeking counsel from. Proverbs points to a few different kinds of folks that are folks we should avoid, and they're pretty obvious, but let's look at them. There's those who are quick to answer, fools, and the wicked. All right, fools and the wicked, all right, we're not going to get a whole lot out of fool, right? Their mouth is going to spout folly. And the wicked, they're really going to, their mouth is going to be pouring out evil things, and they're going to be leading us in a way that's not good. They're really counselors of Satan, and we should be avoiding those two kinds of folks. The first person, those who are quick to answer, Proverbs 18:13 says, "He who gives an answer before he hears is folly and shame to him." Now, you've all met that kind of person, right? It's like, so I'm thinking about this. Oh, you should do this. Well, really? You haven't really heard what I was going to say. You haven't heard of the facts or anything. Well, no, you should definitely do this. And that is the kind of person I think this Proverbs is talking about. Now, there's nothing wrong with you. You know, you're sort of on the fly. Someone approaches you. I got the situation, and I'm thinking about doing this. I'll give you some time to think about it. For the person to say, look, you know, off the top of my head, since you need to go now and we don't have time to talk about it, here's what I'm thinking. I need to better understand the facts. Why don't we come back when you have more time and let's talk about it? That's different. I think that's a different kind of situation. So, all right, those are people we want to avoid. Let's look at the people we should be approaching for counsel. I'll start off by saying there's lots of verses in Proverbs about seeking counsel from an abundance of or a multitude of counselors. And there's a bunch of good Proverbs on it. And I think by doing that, we're just going to equip ourselves in a better fashion to make a wise decision. Well, first, you say, well, okay, why? Why do you need to go to so many people? Well, first, we'll see things from a different perspectives. Our blind spots will be revealed. I see things differently than Misen does and Sherry does. And, you know, so for example, intuitives see differently than sensors. One's not better than another. A feeler sees things differently than a thinker. And I think that the broader a perspective you can get on especially key decisions, the better equipped you'll be. So before I'm an extreme sensor. And so before I make a major decision, I'm going to go to an intuitive and make sure that I see the big picture. Fortunately, I'm married to one. And fortunately, Bill is a huge intuitive. So I'm able to get that big picture. But it's incumbent upon me to go out and seek that. The first characteristic of a person we should seek counsel from is someone who's wise. Okay, that's pretty obvious. Proverbs 1:5 says, "A man of understanding will acquire wise counsel." You want your counsel to be from men of understanding. 15:2 says, "The tongue of the wise makes knowledge acceptable." So another reason to approach wise or understanding men is that they can make the tough stuff a little bit easier to hear, even if the message is tough. Another characteristic of the kind of people we should seek counsel from is one who has, again, understanding. 14:33 says, "Wisdom rests in the heart of one who has understanding." And this is the guy, woman, who can draw the counsel out that's in her heart. So sometimes when I think about that proverb, you know, God may have given us everything we need, all the information we have in our hearts to make that wise decision. But sometimes we need someone of understanding to help kind of draw that out, kind of put the pieces together, kind of connect the dots so that we're able to make that wise decision. Righteous men also make good counselors. 15:28 says, "The right heart of the righteous ponders how to answer." So the righteous person is going to go back, think carefully and very deliberately on how to answer you. And this avoids you getting some half-baked answer. Again, along those lines, I would advise you to give that person some time to think about it, ponder pros and cons. Particularly an introvert is going to want to think about it before they come back to you. An extrovert might want to talk it through. But again, give that person time. I think more often than not, people make poor decisions because they rush the decision. They just go ahead and do it. So if you think about it in the context of God and God being pleased with us or not being pleased with us, if we rush the decision, there's nothing we can do to undo it, right? We basically, if that was not God's will for our lives, we've mucked it up. We've done it. And you can say, "I'm sorry," ask God for forgiveness, but you face the consequences of that bad decision. On the other hand, if something is absolutely God's will for you, to have this car, a spouse, a job, whatever it is, if we don't rush in and we wait, you know, God's still going to make it happen. right? It may, you know, God may have wanted it to happen, you know, on day five, but we wait until day 10. God's not going to be displeased with us because we waited, right? He can still make it happen on day 10 or day 15 or day 20. But once we've made that decision, we're outside of God's control, and we sort of have mucked it up. So did that make sense?
So he's not going to be disappointed in our hesitancy just based on trusting him?
I think that the longer we wait, because when we're waiting, we're relying on God. I mean, if I'm waiting because I just don't want to make a decision, that's different.
Okay.
If I'm waiting because I'm not sure what God's will is for my life,
right.
And I'm saying, God, please bring the truth to me. Please disclose your will for my life. I'm going to seek out a multitude of counselors. I'm going to sit on it. I'm going to think about it. Let me go through those pros and cons again. Let me talk it through with the person I sought counsel from before, and I don't understand. Until we get that conviction, I think God's going to be pleased if we're working that through. But again, rushing that decision, often bad consequences.
And that isn't supposed to disobey, because God doesn't want you to wait.
If you're waiting on a disobedience, on an obedience issue, like I need to seek forgiveness from someone, I shouldn't be waiting around to go do that.
Right. If the counsel is pretty, you know, you sought counsel from multiple counselors, they're saying you really should go ask for forgiveness and sooner or better, rather than letting that bitterness fester. Or it's absolutely clear to you, you know, God said to Jonah, go to Nineveh. Well, I don't know. God's not. So, you know, again, I think we just have to be attuned to what God's will is for our lives. Not necessarily just the counsel, because that's only one input. Let's see. We should seek counsel from people who exhibit love and are willing to say the tough stuff. 28:23 says, he who rebukes a man will afterward find more favor than he who flatters with the tongue. You don't want to seek counsel from people who are trying to please you or say things you want to hear. Even though it feels good, they're not the people you want to seek counsel from. 27:6 says, faithful are the wounds of a friend. You know, this is basically someone who is committed to saying tough things that are in our best interest. And finally, we want to seek counsel from someone who's able, likely, and willing to sharpen us. So 27:17, one of my favorite verses, iron sharpens iron, so one man sharpens another. As we all know, the refining process can be sometimes a painful one. It's tough. Sometimes we have to hack away at the rough edges before we get to the good stuff. And we need somebody to help us and who's committed to us in that way. So let me come to the last sort of question, which is how we should seek and receive counsel. And I think this is the one that will elicit most comments or questions, but let's see what happens. We should, first of all, be proactive about seeking counsel. So Proverbs 1:5 says, and a man of understanding will acquire wise counsel. And acquire is a fairly active verb: acquire, get, obtain. You really don't want to make people chase you, because if they have to chase you, you're probably already going down the wrong path. Another thing is, when we seek counsel, don't take what I call the lazy man's approach. So that means, you know, I have to put effort into thinking about what is God's will for my life. It's my will. It's going to affect me, not the other person. I guess unless you're married. But really, try to, I think we have to really take a lot of effort into thinking, what is God's will? Seeking counsel is just one step in the God's will funnel. You know, there's the Word of God, there's logic, there's leading the Holy Spirit, in addition to seeking counsel. And it's an important step, but it's not the only step. Again, we all have an active and primary role in decision making. When I talk about the lazy man's approach, this is kind of conversation. It's like, okay, so here's a situation. Tell me what I should do. Not good, right? That's not seeking counsel. It's just sort of abdication of responsibility. It's being lazy. It's not being intellectually honest. And really, you're kind of foisting this decision that's yours onto the other person, whether it's a spouse, accountability partner, roommate, whoever it is. It is really not a great approach to take. So I think, you know, a better approach is, first of all, I think we could all benefit from thinking about the situation, the decision we're about to take, and praying about it and trying to figure out, what does God want me to do? And I think for extroverts, maybe resisting the temptation to just kind of talk about it. because then it's a little bit unstructured, and you're saying things that you haven't thought about, and so this other person's trying to sit there, okay, well, she said this, or he said this, but now they're saying this, so do they mean this or this? And so to kind of work that through a little bit, and then I would approach the person and say, look, here are the facts, fairly succinctly, here are the facts. I would avoid all of the gory detail, and then say to the person, I've thought through the pros and cons. And here I think are the pros of this decision, here are the cons. And here's where I come out, a sort of a hypothesis of what I think I ought to do, what I think God wants me to do. Then you ask, what are the gaps in my thinking? Do you see any blind spots? Am I missing something? What is your counsel? I would really love to hear what you have to say. And so if you leave that open-ended, what do you have to say? Then the person has that entree to say, here's counsel. Sometimes people kind of take a side road and they say they make this like sort of an advocacy conversation. So here's why I think God wants me to do this, and I think He wants me to do this, and I know that, but yeah. So do you agree with what I want to do? And that's not seeking counsel, right? It's an open-ended question. Here's what I think God wants me to do. I'm not sure, and so can you please help me think through this? Just a quick aside, telling someone what you did or are going to do also is not seeking counsel. Right? If you've already committed to it, I've done it, what do you think? It's kind of like that. My clients internally say, I signed the contract, what do you think? I think we need to have an open and listening and receptive kind of attitude. So 12:15 says, a wise man is he who listens to counsel. 19:20 says, listen to counsel and accept instruction that you may be wise the rest of your days. 22:17 says, incline your ear and hear the words of the wise and apply your mind to my knowledge. So again, we want to listen, be really good listeners, and not respond right away. We want to thank the person, for the input they've given, and think about what they've said. Don't respond in that conversation. Think about, God could be using this person. God uses elders, God uses accountability partners, roommates, friends to speak to us directly. Another point. If we've laid out the situation to the person, so you say, here are the facts, here are the pros and cons, and then you find yourself doing most of the talking, you're probably not doing a whole lot of listening. So if you find yourself kind of in that, I'm seeking counsel from you, but you're doing all the talking, you may not be doing a good job listening. So a couple other ways in which we should seek counsel. We should have a spirit of humility and a teachable attitude. I think we should fully expect correction, reproof, rebuke, things we don't want to hear and don't necessarily agree with. 14:22 says, there is a way which seems right to a man, but its end is the way of death. 27:5-7 says, better is open rebuke than love that is concealed. Faithful are the wounds of a friend, but deceitful are the kisses of an enemy. A sated man, or a guy who's full, loathes honey, but to a famished man, any bitter thing is sweet. Great, great Proverbs. I tend to think that our initial instinct on something is often wrong, at least according to Scripture and according to God's will for our lives, because I think we've conditioned ourselves to, be tempted by power, pleasure, possessions, and that's the thing we want. It's on the forefront of our minds. We see it in advertising. We see it all around us. And so, yeah, I think I ought to do that. I would just caution about going after that first instinct. Not always. I think we should be grateful. Don't shoot the messenger. People who give counsel, it's the last thing they want to do is give hard counsel. Things that people don't want to hear, they know they're not going to be well received. 24:26 says, he kisses the lips who gives a right answer. So we should be, not literally, but kissing the lips of that person who's giving us good counsel. Oil and perfume make the heart glad, so a man's counsel is sweet to his friend. We don't want to be like that ex-CEO who basically fired us for giving him advice. Don't shoot.
I mean, they're covering up something?
Pardon me?
Is this that mean they're covering up something?
No, which verse are you talking about?
Oil and perfume?
I think it's saying that oil and perfume, the good counsel should be like sweet swelling oil or perfume. We should be looking at it in that fashion. In fact, Misan was sharing an edification with me, I don't know, a week or so ago. And she was saying, you know, if wise counsel is really from God and it's a gift from God, we should relish it, and we should, when we get it, we should think about it very positively. That's sort of like winning a prize. We should look forward to getting it and actively seeking it out. And another added benefit is if we are grateful and we accept it humbly without arguing and, you know, kind of going at it with the person, we've probably all done that, that person is more likely in the future to give us candid counsel, which is, you know, I think I would advise all of us to try to build up a cadre of counselors in different areas, different ages, different kinds of personality types, so that we can sort of have our own personal cabinet, right, at the ready, people who are willing to tell us, and we haven't given them grief over the years, so that, you know, after a couple of times, you get burned as you know, giving counsel. You sort of say, you know, unless it's some person going off a cliff, I'm just going to kind of step back a little. When you get your head bitten off too many times, so as the person receiving counsel, bite your tongue, just listen, and think about it. And then, you know, and I mean, one other point on this is, you know, after getting the advice, you may not always agree, right? So you go back, you think about it, pros and cons. I still don't get it. I don't understand why this person's telling me doing X when I want to do Y, or I think God's telling me to go in the direction of Y. I think it's always good to close that loop. I would go back to that person and say, look, I heard your counsel. I don't understand it. Let me go through the pros and cons again, hash it out. Because that person may not have understood some of the facts. That person may not understand the whole context. You may have colored it in a particular way, or you still may be wrong. And so you just don't want to have that loop kind of hanging out there. And it also, you know, gives Satan an opportunity to create some bitterness. See, that person, he didn't really want you to do what you wanted to do, and he's not acting in your best interest. So, you know, it creates distance and bitterness, and it's not a great dynamic. So even if you agree with the counsel, I would just go back and say, hey, look, you know, saw your counsel, great counsel, and I'm acting on it. I think that really will open up the person to give you more counsel in the future. We should be honest and transparent, revealing all relevant information so the person can get a full picture. We don't want to twist the facts so that we get the answer we want. We're all good at that. I think we need to be pretty open and give all the sort of negative consequences and things we really know in our heart of hearts so that person can make give us good counsel. Because they're making giving counsel based only on what you tell them. And so we should be as frank as possible. We should be ready to take action or wait. So if you think the counsel you've received is wise counsel, we should think seriously about actually taking steps to implement that. Just getting the advice doesn't mean that we've kind of fulfilled our obligation to do what's God's will. We actually have to either wait or take action. And then again, just to remind us, I think we have to take full responsibility for the decision that we make. We shouldn't go into a conversation seeking counsel for the magic bullet, the magic answer. Counsel is, again, one factor in our own decision making, and we really should have a hypothesis as to what the right answer is before we go into that conversation. And I guess the last thing on this topic is to make sure you understand the counsel that's been given. I would, at the end of the discussion, say, okay, let me make sure I understand I heard you. You are counseling me to do X, and the reason you're counseling me to do X is Y. Are we on the same page? Because sometimes we think we heard one thing, or especially if it's an extrovert conversation, there's a lot of stuff going on, and you're sort of like, he said this, and then he said that, and then he said this, but then he said that because I said that. So you want to come back at the end and say, did I hear you correctly? Because, you know, it's important to get the right counsel. I do think that, you know, Proverbs cautions us in 14:15 to not act naively. We have to be discerning, because not all counsel, even from wise folks, is going to be correct. So we do have to be discerning. Let me give you, I'm going to close with a couple things. A couple examples from Scripture of people who did not heed the wise counsel. So we have Daniel, who advised King Nebuchadnezzar. Daniel exhorted the king to renounce his sins and to turn to doing what's right. He ignored Daniel's advice, and he went insane for 7 years. I love this passage. So it's Daniel 4, verse 27 to 33. That very hour, the word was fulfilled concerning Nebuchadnezzar. He was driven from men and ate grass like oxen. His body was wet with dew from heaven till his hair had grown like eagle's feathers and his nails like bird's claws. Not a good result for King Nebuchadnezzar. 7 years. And then Pontius Pilate, his wife, actually counseled him pretty wisely. She said, have nothing to do with Christ. He ignored her. Big mistake. So I'm going to close with an example of somebody in the body, and apologies for embarrassing Misty, but she really did almost like a textbook seeking counsel recently on her moonlighting opportunity. So you all know something about the wonton place, dumpling kind of moonlighting opportunity. So anyway, Misty went and saw it. First of all,
everyone knows the situation.
Okay. Moonlighting. Okay, so.
I didn't get that detail.
So Misty has a date. Let me clarify this for the record. Misty has a day job. Some of the customers are clients of the company she works for during the day. She's had some discussions with. They're very interesting companies. And one of them actually asked her to, you know, work one day a week, not on anything relating to what the services her current employer provides, but, you know, just to help them out because they're doing all sorts of stuff. In the evening, after work, not on work time. That's why it's called moonlighting. You do it during the evening. Misty was very excited. And this is a potential place where, you know, she might end up permanently. Very interesting stuff. So Misty first thought about this, I think, a great deal before she ever sought counsel. She sought counsel from the three elders and laid out the facts very, very clearly and thought about what she thought the right answer was. You know, here's my hypothesis. She was super excited about the opportunity, but said that it was happening so fast, she wanted to slow down and go through the will of God funnel to make sure it was God's will for her life. There was an implicit recognition that she could be wrong. She also was holding the opportunity with an open hand and was looking for any red flags. So Misty, in an email to me, used phrases like, any input, concerns, etc. are welcomed and appreciated. It was not a justification of what she wanted to do. It was a sincere, humble approach for counsel. And at the same time, it was not an abdication of responsibility. So to give you a sense of the state of her mind, again from her email to me, it was, I recently read a certain book, and one of my biggest takeaways is giving God opportunities that I'm excited about to make sure they go through the refiner's fire before they are given back to me, if given back at all. I'm praying for God to show me what that may look like with this opportunity. I raised some potential questions and thoughts, and she carefully thought through them, responded, and then we had another conversation, and I think she really carefully considered whether or not she was being deceived by this thing that she wanted to do so badly. So in the end, I think she made a very wise decision, and really, I mean, anytime Misty came to me again, I'd be happy to give her counsel because she made it so easy, and, you know, she really thought it through. So I'm going to leave you guys with top 10 things to think about when seeking counsel. And we've reviewed most of this just to kind of leave you with something. First, start early in the process. Second, take full responsibility for your decision. Go through that will of God funnel, map out pros and cons, and come up with a preliminary answer of what you think the answer is. Avoid the lazy man's approach, tell me what to do. We should be proactive, humble, transparent, thankful, and flexible. We should seek counsel from the wise, but don't forum shop. These are people with a proven track record of wise decisions and, if appropriate, expertise and experience. You should give the person a full picture while omitting all the gory details. We should hold a decision with an open hand, particularly if it's something we really, really want. And we should be prepared to hear things we don't like. We shouldn't respond right away to the counsel. Go away and think about it carefully and objectively, even if you agree with the counsel. We should be discerning. We should be prepared to wait. And if we think the counsel we receive is consistent with God's will for our lives, we should act on it. So, that's it. Why don't we have some time for questions? I have a bunch of questions. I'm sure Gaynell has a question.
Don't be honest with that because I saw my hand up. I think it's two-part. One is, do you have any, I don't even know what the word is, guideline parameters or some thoughts that we could think through when we're deciding on things that are, you know, between the war and between the tie? For example, hiring a dog trainer for my dog. I guess I didn't really seek counsel. I just assumed my dog really needs it based on the facts in front of me. So I'm hiring a dog trainer. No, I guess I didn't technically seek counsel on that. But would that be an example? And then, secondly, if we're all out there now seeking counsel, which we may be even more than we used to based on this sermon, do you have any advice for those who are giving the counsel?
Mm-hmm. Good questions. I think that, you know, it's a really tough question. You know, what are the situations where we should seek counsel? And it's going to be different for different people. So let's say I have a problem with spending. I'm in debt, a lot of credit card debt. I'm not good at spending. For me, seeking counsel on buying a Starbucks coffee or an iPod or a T-shirt might be in my best interest, right? Because it's something, an area of my life that I'm struggling with. I don't know the dog training situation, but if you had an issue with your budget, it might be an area. If you had an issue with, I'm making this up, you idolize your dog and, you know, dog sits on the throne and, you know, right? Then seeking that kind of counsel out might be a good thing. I think that if the test I use and talked about it with me saying I'm not sure it's the right one because it either might bring in too much or too little. If the decision I'm making will affect how I fare at the judgment seat, then I might want to seek counsel for that. Now you could say every decision you make is going to affect my judgment, how I fare at the judgment seat, which is true. I think there's some things that God gives us enough wisdom to, you know, make decisions on. There's others that have long-lasting effects. So if you came to me and said, I want to get married to Joe and, you know, we're getting married tomorrow, I might say that may not be God's will for you or might not be a wise decision. And the ramifications are so large that you might want to kind of talk that through with a bunch of people. Again, I don't want to get into the specific of the dog thing, but if you think that there's something, well, let me put it this way. If I think somebody I respect might think, you did what? Mm-hmm. If I think that there's any possibility, and not just because it's their preference, but really, didn't we talk about that? Or then I might step back and say, maybe I actually better think about that a little bit more. I don't, what do other people think? I'm not trying to, solicit, every calls every 10 minutes.
Yeah, I mean,
for any of us, right?
Yeah, part of it, I think of my tendencies, and if it seems like an issue that I'm maybe a little bit less likely to want to be transparent about, then I kind of prod myself maybe to get a little bit more counsel. And if it's, and then I also kind of, if it seems to connect back to some, like kind of you said, a high-risk area or something that I've had to deal with in my Christian life, then I try to make sure, I don't want to be deceived and I think I'm okay on this. And, you know, it doesn't take a long time necessarily to ask for some counsel.
One other thing is recognize that a lot of the decisions that we make is related to a character issue, right? Whether in the positive or the negative. So if you're able to look at your actions and relate it to a character issue and say, is this enhancing the character or, you know, making it worse or perpetuating it, then that becomes, I think, a cause for seeking counsel as well. Mm-hmm.
I've noticed over the years I've been in a position where an awful lot of people have come to me, had to come to me for advice or chose to. I've noticed several things I'd like to relate to your comments. That is that most people I have found who've come for advice really don't want advice. They want you to approve what it is they want to do. And if you don't approve what they want to do, they don't really consider it very good advice that you've given them. You can usually tell that by the fact that the person is arguing with your advice. And the worst thing you can do when you give someone for advice is to argue with their advice. You may not agree with it. It may be bad advice, but it's not really smart to be arguing with the person that you're going to for counsel or advice. You hear them out, and you could ask some questions to try to get the other point of view. But if you really don't want advice, don't seek it, because it's a waste of both people's times. Another thing that I've noticed is that in my decision-making over the years, and I think it's true of a lot of people, but certainly mine, if your mind and your gut are not in agreement, watch out and get advice. If you're intellectually convinced of something, but something in your stomach is telling you it's not right. I've made two or three decisions in my life looking back on it. Every time that I didn't listen to my gut, it was a mistake. I'm not saying your gut is always right. I'm saying when they're at war. And when the two were together, it was fine. You could almost say that the Holy Spirit was that gut. But it was a silent voice that you didn't listen to. And it's always been that way. Not that the gut said do something and the mind argued. It was the other way around. So listen to that tiny voice and seek advice when you find that you're at war with yourself, because I think God is trying to tell you that something has to be done. And Elaine, the best negotiating tool in the world, and the top negotiators in the world will tell you, it's the silence. There's nothing that makes people more uncomfortable than to be in a room together negotiating. Fool has to fill with sound. And they talk and they say things they shouldn't say, and before you know it, they've lost their negotiating position. Mm-hmm. So silence is an incredibly powerful tool, and never underestimate
it. Daniel, your second question, that's really another sermon, but I'll give you some thoughts, and that's, you know, for a person giving counsel, I mean, I think there's a few thoughts. You know, a lot of them are probably similar, which is to be pretty darn humble. And be honest. If you don't know the answer, tell them you don't know the answer. Don't make it up. And the other thing is try to kind of examine your motives. And, you know, as among, you know, spouses and roommates, people are close. Like, this body is very close. Think about what are my motives? Do I not want this person to succeed? And if they do, they might succeed. And the petty stuff, you got to kind of take that out. And right, really try to bring that person to, what are the biblical principles behind this? What are my experiences? And to give, and you know, asking for advice is hard. I mean, unless we're kind of grooved in it. And even then, I think it's hard. So, you know, be very gentle in terms of how we're giving that advice, because it's hard to hear. And no matter the way you say it, it's going to be magnified like 10 times. So just kind of taper back a little, but just make sure that you understand the facts. Make sure that person understands the counsel you're giving. They may hear completely something differently. And then, very importantly, the rationale. Because, you know, somebody can say to me, you know, my kid comes to me and says, Dad, what should I do? Okay, do this. They have no idea why. Well, they have no conviction. And they're going to come back to me next time. They have the same situation because they have no idea why they did it. So, I don't know. Other people have thoughts on...
Why? It's because God may put us in a situation to be giving help to someone else. Their situation is a little bit different. So if we don't understand the reasons why, then we can't actually attach ourselves to the principle behind it. So then we might be giving faulty counsel down the line because we didn't really fully understand. So, I mean, I know in the past it's been helpful, even if I, don't know, did understand or didn't, just to ask and make sure I understand why. Because all of that kind of becomes a toolkit, I guess, for using down the line. Is that...
definitely.
Fair.
I mean,
so it's not even about me sometimes. It's like, well, let me really fully understand this. Okay, if I came to you with this, what would you have said? What about this? You know, so maybe I can even get more angles than was even my issue.
Yeah, especially, I mean, when you're talking to someone who's the more of the tell me what to do kind of person, I think it's very important to go to the why, because if they don't understand that underlying why, they're going to be half-hearted about it, and they're not going to be committed, they're not going to be convicted, and this is God's will for their life, not your life.
I think God, is it better to do the counsel without understanding why? Is God more likely to bless just doing it, even if you haven't gone through these steps, or at a certain point you think if you're asking counsel with all of the bad motives and reasons that God's not, even if you do it, but you're not doing it for the right reasons, would God still bless you doing it? Or at a certain point does he expect you to have the right motivations and he might frustrate an effort of yours to do counsel that you don't understand?
Does anyone not ever ask why? Like, do any of us seek counsel and leave without understanding of why?
Yeah, I think. I've definitely observed people seeking counsel and not understanding the rationale well enough.
Really?
So they're kind of off and running, and like Corey said, it's too bad that they're doing that because one. They miss the opportunity to kind of learn in the situation and then therefore be able to apply it to other areas of their life because they never really learned the principles or they can't help someone else. Or to Steve's point, they don't have the conviction to kind of go out and do it. I think some people want to just move quickly.
Or
in authority, I've been in authority situations at work where, you know, it's a very intimidating situation a little bit, like you're getting counsel, you don't quite get it, but you don't want to ask the question because you sound, you know, maybe you don't sound dumb or the person doesn't, you know, you're afraid you're going to get the person upset, you know. So sometimes we don't hang in there long enough to really get the input, make sure we understand it. And sometimes because we don't get that input and that clarification, people run off and do things and the counselor never was suggesting that. Or the counselor didn't even know he was giving counsel and we're kind of moving off a preference of someone. Someone says, oh, I always like, you know, I always go here for dinner, you know. It's not a good example, but I've been in situations where I was working off a preference and it wasn't even counsel.
If I may, one thing that I've done myself and I've seen it happen and it kind of now raises a red flag is if someone comes to me and says, oh, well, Joe said it was okay to do it. You know what I mean? Only Joe. Well, it's okay if I go do X because whatever. Sam said it was God's will. But I guess like what you're saying, that's you know, that's a piece of it. But I would hope to hear from someone, I'm convinced that God wants me to do it. Sam agrees. I also checked with Joe, and everyone's, you know, in consensus. So I'm confident because God wants me to do this, not because Joe wants me to do it. Because then if you go into it and it's hard, which a lot of times the stuff that God says to do is hard, then you can go back and blame Joe.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
I mean, all this other fallout happens. That's just from me observing and seeing, you know, myself and others. I would think that we want to make sure that we think that this is what God wants us to do. And then we can, you know, deal with him on it. And if it's hard and it's what he wants us to do, then he'll give us the power to do it, you know? Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, if in our minds we're thinking, well, I just need somebody, I need a scapegoat to blame if this doesn't go well, that's, you know, we shouldn't be going around saying, well, you know, Misty said it was okay, so I'm doing it. Well, that's lame. That's lame. not because of Misty, right? It's, you know, I'm doing it because I think God wants me to do this. To answer your other question about, you know, is it better to obey without knowing why? You want, ideally, you want both. You know, if you're struggling with obedience in general, I guess it's a good step. But you really, I mean, God doesn't really care. The result doesn't matter. That's what is going through our head. Am I obeying God because God thinks, you know, God wants me to learn this particular lesson? That's probably better than just blindly going and doing something you have no idea why. Yes?
Christian, we have three elders in the body. I'm just a little bit curious. Are we... Your workload in terms of advice giving, are we overloading you or are we not even close to that? Would you like us to be overloaded?
Careful, Vince. Careful.
Is there a chain of command? Is there all three at once?
Well, would you like us to seek more counsel than we currently do, or somebody say, well, you actually should think more yourself before you enter?
I got my accountability.
Well, yeah, yes, exactly. My first point would be, I want to think of your council as the three elders in BAC. There's mature people in the body, roommates and stuff. No matter what the maturity level, can be a sounding board. So there's lots of, and then there's certain decisions that, you know, doing some carpentry in the house, it's probably a decision that counsel from an expert in that area. So, I wouldn't think of this as Steve, Bill, or myself.
Yeah, I mean, we have a pretty good handle on what's going on because we're of our size. And, you know, I think accountability partners are great people to go to. And again, it's a multitude of counselors. So if you're hearing kind of differing counsel, you kind of ask to say, all right, well, maybe I need to seek more counsel or clarify with those people I'm hearing the conflicting counsel, get them in a room together saying, well, I'm hearing you say this. I really want to sort through this. I mean, it's just being open about it.
This is probably the answer to a question that's on paper. If you get different advice from multiple people.
Yeah. What do people think of that?
Question number two. You sought counsel from an abundance of wise counselors and you get different answers. It's when you clarify for more answers.
I also think that, you know, if I'm not getting, you know, sort of a thumbs up all around, you know, kind of the mind, heart, and multitude of counselors saying, this important decision is God's will, I'm going to wait. It's not my tendency. I don't want to wait, but that is something I really think, you know what, until I get clarity and I understand why it is there's a difference in view, I don't want to act on it.
Two people always agree one of them's unnecessary. So, that sounds like the Delta Gorge, but my point to answer your question is, the fact that you might get different answers sometimes is very valuable. Mm-hmm. If you're going to people who always agree, you're going to one too many people. If it's two people. And in a company of two people always agree on everything, one of them, you don't need the other. So you always want some diversity. You should expect that if you have a multiplicity of answers. That forces you to examine the premises. And sometimes the lone voice is the one that turns out to be right. Certainly in the investment business, most great investment decisions, the minority, it's the one who has the vision, not the committee. So it's something at least to think about.
And my guess is people probably could benefit from seeking more counsel. Because I think, well, the first question is why are people hesitant to seek counsel?
I mean, it's two reasons. One is because I really don't want to overload other people, by conscience of other people's time. And the other one is if you afraid that you're not going to like the answer.
That's a big one. Do you want advice or do you want the pat on the back? There's a difference.
Right.
Yeah, I think also in the overload one, I think sometimes we want the decision faster, but the overload one, you know, speaking as someone who might have individuals coming at them, isn't a problem as long as it's, I need this answer in 24 hours. And then if it is really like you look at it and you say, oh yeah, this is really something that really this person does need input right away, then you know you usually step up and do that. But a lot of times the person's thinking, oh, I need this in 24 hours, when in reality they don't. And then so the overload issue, okay, I've got 5 days to kind of think about this and figure it out.
Yeah, waiting is important.
Other questions? You mean people's opinions?
How to respond? What if they really did need evidence or came and asked for it?
Yeah, I think it depends on the person, right? If it's someone who is quick to answer and just sort of meddling, you may want to discount it a bit. If it's someone who's sort of wise and they're sort of saying, gee, Laura, I heard you're going to do X. I was a little surprised. Have you thought about the issue? I might pause. I mean, because God could have sent that person to you. And it could be even the sort of person who's quick to respond. I mean, if people are unsolicited coming to you, there may be a reason. I would be careful.
There's one other perspective, too. That is, if you have a counselor, counsels you to do A, you end up doing B. That that counselor comes back to you angry that you haven't done what he counseled you to do. How to avoid that counselor in the future, because the person who's wise, you say you want to look for a wise person. A wise person doesn't get mad at someone who's come to them if they don't do it with their counselor. So this is a two-edged sword. I commented that you don't, many times people don't want advice, they really want the approbation. Well, the other side of that is counselors should never get mad at someone who doesn't take their advice and express that, because then they're violating, if you will, the bond that's supposed to be there. It's the ultimate person's decision, not the counselor's decision.
Well, if the person's ego is vested in, I'm giving advice, that's usually, you know, discounts the person a little bit, and I think we've all been there, but you grow in maturity and it's a little bit less about, oh, I'm the big advice giver here, and your interest and motivation is really what's in their best interest, and that guides you.
What if you have a situation where you have somebody coming to you for advice, and you give them advice, they ignore it, you give it, and they continue to get themselves in hot water on a regular basis? Being a feeler, I just get irritated. My excuse. But over time, as you mature, you just sort of think, you know, what can I do here? But you sort of just think, I don't know if I waste my time anymore. There is a sort of an irritation factor then that guides you. Here we come again, I hear this again, you didn't do anything I've said before, why are you asking me? You know,
I think that's a mistake. I think the fact they're coming to you tells you they respect you, and give them your best advice.
Never listen
is probably an extreme position. If it's your son, if it's your child or husband, you can have definitely coercive as an outsider.
I mean, I think that, you know, there's an opportunity. Not exactly sure what's motivating that person, but at least they're coming to you, right?
Yeah.
But it is an opportunity to say, well, maybe we could go over this great outline on seeking counsel. maybe not in the midst of another situation, but to say, you know, I'm just thinking about how our dynamic is, and you seem to come to want approval, but you're not getting it because I don't necessarily think all the things you're wise. Here's a couple examples. You know, are you really seeking counsel or are you seeking approval? Because if you're seeking approval, you're not going to get it. You're going to come to the wrong place and you have the wrong motivation. And so you want to kind of be a bit more wise about that. And at the same time, I think God's trying to refine you as the recipient of all this and saying, well, you know, I've been there too. You know, so like, the knucklehead is doing it again for the sixth time. But it's not me. It's not my life, right? I mean, and my responsibility is give objective advice that I think is in that person's best interest in a way that's easy for that person to hear. And if the person takes it, you can't control that. Once we step over that, then we're in the realm of trying to control people, and that is not a place we want
to
be.
You have to be careful to call them a fool. What's that first? You know it.
It's from Matthew 5.
What is it?
Don't say raka to your brother.
Because you'll suffer the consequence of the fire or something yourself.
Murdering that person.
Yes, John?
Just going back to Hans's and Vince's perspective, it's always good to acknowledge to yourself that the person who you're seeking counsel from is not going to be perfect. And they will make mistakes. But God has put you in a position or a relationship with that person because you too can, through your actions, impact on the counsel giver. And they too can learn from you as well. There's always a reason why God put you in a relationship with that person.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, as recipients, it goes without saying that let's not expect perfection from the giver advice. Let's kind of cut to the chase. What is the person trying to say? Forget about how they said it. I mean, you just got to set that aside. It's hard to do, but it's something that we should strive to do.
I learned something very early in my career. A very wise man comes in the investment business, as you all know. And investment committees invariably are bad things. As I said, great decisions are usually made individually. But there was a particular person on this committee, and I have to be honest, it was invariably wrong. And I finally one day got close enough to this wise man. I said, why do you keep him on this committee? He says, he's one of the most valuable people I have. He's a contrary indicator. And there's nothing more valuable than someone who's almost always wrong in the investigation. Because you know that's the opposite. You should be doing the opposite. And you want someone lesson for me to learn at first, and then it dawned on me immediately what he was getting. So the multiplicity of advisors, if you can find that one valuable person who's always wrong, he's forgotten.
Carrie?
Don't underestimate
that. I was first like, oh, I'll never do that.
When you talk about advice in particular types of relationships, we also have God-given authority in certain relationships. Then I think it changes the picture a little bit, even if you might not agree with the advice. If my parents would tell me to do something, I have to do it, even though I might not agree with it. If I seek advice on a spiritual issue, and my church leadership tells me to do something, I have to do it. Is that correct?
Is that true?
Yeah, there's a fine line between authority and seeking advice, right? I mean, if you come to me and say, what is the church's official position on communion? Should women have their heads covered or not, or whatever? And you're seeking advice as to whether you should wear a head covering or not. If we come out, the elders as authorities say, you should not do this, then, and it's a significant issue, then it starts to become an authority issue, right? If you're saying, well, I got your advice, but take a hike, I'm going to do whatever I want. I think if we're seeking counsel, we have to be careful about whether or not it's an issue. It comes under the issue of authority, right? If you ask me about the dog counselor thing, and I counsel you to say, no, you shouldn't do it, I don't think that's an authority issue. There is this area, and I think it's a small area of authority where the elders would come and say, you should or should not do this. As an issue of, church leadership. But I think those are far and few between. A lot of this is counsel. And then there's another area of preference. So like Vince was saying, I'm talking to John and I say, I really like to order, from the Chinese restaurant for lunch. And John says, oh, we got to order from the Chinese restaurant for lunch. No, that's a preference. That's not even counsel. It's just sort of, I like Chinese food. Right, so we have to be pretty clear about, when we're giving and receiving, are we soliciting advice, your opinion? Sometimes you're just, having lunch, after church and you kind of say, I like this. And all of a sudden, you hear somebody saying, "Well, Vince said you have to do it this way." That's just a comment. It's preference. So, let's be sensible about it, reasonable about when is it something that's an authority issue, something that's a preference, and something in the sort of council.
The reason I gave you that, I remember the Gotha seminary we went to, and he was quite big on the authority, and he came with some statements and some questions and situations that may seem quite controversial, whereas he would suggest that if you basically follow the people who are in authority over you, that's God's way of protecting you against a lot of things. So when in doubt, follow that authority, you're safe in a sense.
Yes, but let's not make all counsel from folks in authority let's not make all of that an authority issue. If you're not sure, clarify. Am I under your umbrella of authority on this particular issue? So again, I can use an example of somebody saying, I want to
divorce on marriage.
Okay, there you go.
Yeah, because if you were to listen to the elders versus your parents, what if your parents were like, yeah, go get a divorce right now, and they're like, whoa, hold on. You got two authority potentially, but two very different reasons.
Because that is an area of church position,
right,
on an important topic that has long term implications.
Right.
But you also, I think if you remember, he was saying this is one piece of the will funnel. I think if most of us did the work up front and searched the scriptures, I think that would eliminate 90% of the questions. I think if you said, God, what is your will for me today? And let me read in my quiet time this morning, guide me. And so many answers can be eliminated. Do I spend money on this? There are so many principles. I think we have to put the responsibility in ourselves. I think a lot of times,
The household didn't sit in scriptures on that topic or do a word study. So it's a lot easier to just pick up the phone and say, what do you think? You know, I did like a 5-second study on this. And I think even if there is a topic that may be more controversial or more important or more significant, if someone came up with a conclusion and it doesn't match up with, let's say, the church leadership, instead of just saying, well, I just want to blindly submit to the church elders, get into a room and do a word study, do a Bible study. I mean, I think that came up 10 years ago. When there was a big issue, the elders proposed to the person or the party, let's sit down and study the scriptures on this topic. So that there isn't just, well, you say this, I say this, we're going to make a conclusion. Because you should be able to, I mean, I think God doesn't want to keep his will in the dark. I mean, I think he wants to enlighten, he wants to show us that we're really searching for it. So, grab the word, that's really all you need. So, it doesn't seem like you should be just blindly submitting. I think that's dangerous.
Well, I mean, I put myself a big issue, what should I do? And I got from the word different inputs, I got from people in authority different inputs, so I just waited until it became clear.
When it comes to the authority of like parents, you know, I know God said, stay under your parents' authority. They're unbelievers. Who's their authority? If their authority is Satan, why would I want to then stay under their authority? Where I know now as an adult, my parents are, they're definitely not believers. You know, I take their advice, okay, as parents that love me from an earthly point of view, you know. But if it's like way off than what I should be doing, then I'm not under any obligations to submit to their authority. As, you know, God's obviously totally different than what they have to say. I mean, right now I'm 30 years old now, but I'm sure I'm well past the age of, I think, maybe even, I don't even know, in a Judaism sense, where you're at that age where you're...
14?
I don't know. Yeah. But, you know, honor your father and your mother. I don't know if at that time was, you know, was that because the parents were under God's authority, and so as the children, yes, you kind of do the same. But, you know, I think at a time, you get to the point where you get your own and you make your own decisions, and you can be under authority of the church or God. And your parents are just well off, you know, just... alcoholics or whatever, they just love it, then, you know, I think their authority is no longer, you're not under the umbrella. I mean, why would you even want to put yourself under?
Yeah, I mean, Gothard is not, I mean, Gothard is somewhat on the extreme side of authority. I mean, obey authority until, you know, whenever.
And you have to think about where Gothard's coming out of. It's basic youth conflicts. His basis for his thinking is dealing with difficult 17, 18-year-old kids, 21-year-old kids, who for the most part would do well to understand authority in their lives.
Some authority. Yeah, and I think, I mean, the point I would make is we should be under some authority. All of us should be under some authority. And if some of the authority is, you know, based on, you know, unbiblical things, then we probably shouldn't be following that and, you know, lean more towards biblical authority. But it's not good to be outside of all authority.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I know my parents, they live, I think, by the Ten Commandments. My parents are kind of mean, where they, you know, I think my mom is a believer. I'm pretty sure she is. My dad is not. But he lives his life by rules, but he refuses to accept Christ.
Yeah, I mean, one of the questions was, you know, could we seek counsel from non-believers? And I think it's perfectly appropriate, depending on the issue. I mean, if I want to know how to build a shed, and no one here knows how to build a shed, I'm going to go find some expert who knows how to build a shed. Now, whether or not I have the finances to do that, is that a wise thing to do with my money? I may go to somebody who has no idea how to build a shed. I might go to Bill or Vince and say, I want to build a shed. I have no idea how to do it. I think I have the plans, but you think from my budget point of view, that's a wise thing to do. And so, you know, I think we should clearly seek out people with experience and expertise. I also think that we should make sure that we're seeking counsel from people who have our best interest at heart, and in terms of the long term, because that's more important than, you know, do I, you know, spend $5,000 or $6,000 on this shit.
Getting back to your point, you might get different advice from people. I mean, I was on the committee with the same person I was talking about. He was the chairman. I was the vice chairman of the committee at that time. It was a vote, and whether we should buy a given stock. And he and I voted yes, and one other person, and about seven or eight other people voted no. And so the chairman said, well, we're going to buy the stock. And the vote, everyone said, wait a minute, the vote was against buying the stock. And he said, I don't count votes, I weigh them.
Wow.
It's something to think about, that if you get different advice, weigh the source.
Yeah.
Don't always go on numerical numbers. Don't be bothered by different opinions. Weigh them.
Yeah, that's a great point.
It sounded like an autocrat he was.
Anything else? How are we doing on food?
They called it like 25 minutes ago, asked what street it was.
Looks like we still have time. They are?
I
still make it.
This guy quit rehearsing for Carousel. Maybe he's here.
Well, we can keep talking. Any other questions?
Yep. A plug for you guys. I think we also need to remember that this series is in which you take the roles. You know, once we've been convinced of our leadership, you know, I'm confident that you take counsel that you give me seriously as you have to answer to it at the judgment seat. So I have a lot of confidence in that, and I think that we should value that, you know, just for the seriousness and appreciate the role that, and the effort that you guys have taken. So that's just a plug. But I think it's hard to find leadership that you're convinced of. So
yes.
Once you do, there's no reason, like, if you get eight things that you guys agreed with us on and one not, like, come on, you know, nothing else has changed. You guys are still alive, so I don't know where we come off like that. Just not liking APs, and then all of a sudden, you know,
well, it goes back.
The convince of our eldership is gone.
But it goes back. It goes back to the first question, because if I ask, somebody may say something that ends up being counsel against what I really want to do. Well, that's fundamentally what this whole thing is about, right? So you look at people who don't seek counsel that much, they just kind of do what they want to do. And the people who really want to kind of go along God's path and they make tough decisions, even so, sometimes they don't like it, they'll ask the question.
Yeah, I think of Mason's point, though. I'm just so grateful, you know, over the last 20 years of my life to have people who know me well enough, care about me well enough, to give that kind of input on these things. God, it's invaluable. You know, I just look at, you know, friends I have at work. They don't have that. Maybe they've got a wise father. Maybe they don't. Maybe they've got a mentor from a previous job, but, you know, they don't really know what's going on in all aspects of their life. You know, just to have that in your life is, God, you're very grateful for it. Thank God for it.
We got our own little McKenzie for free.
There you go. Very high price.
For the firm. Especially minus parents. I'm grateful to have everybody here. Barbara, on a constant basis.
No, if you think about it, I mean, you think about your kind of friends out there in the secular realm. They have nobody to turn to. They buy these wacky books, or they saw a TV program that advised them on how to raise their kids, or, I mean, literally, they're just grasping at straws. They have no kind of solid basis. And clearly, no one who knows them. And even if they have friends who know them, those people aren't going to tell them the hard things. Right? They're just simply just like, the guy's a dope, but why is I'm not saying anything? Anyway, I'll leave you with a challenge. I think that if you're not actively seeking out counsel on a regular basis, you should think about it.